Invite you again to take your Bibles and turn along with me. Right, it does work. Almost. We're going to continue the topic that we talked about this morning about Christians who are people that end up being selfish. In particular, we're going to focus on Christians who are acting selfishly. Over in Matthew chapter 7, I want to start out with a particular verse. Matthew chapter 7. And starting with verse 1, it says, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck that is out of your brother's eye." There are some people that are very, very quick to tell you what you need to do, but they can't see anything that needs to be improved in their own particular life, at least not at that moment. A while back, and it's been quite a while now, I had a phone call that got me thinking about this particular topic. Believe it or not, on a Saturday night, late on the Saturday night, I had a woman call asking if I knew somebody who could give her daughter a haircut. And if she wanted to know if I knew of a Christian who cut hair. And we got talking about it, because it was a very unusual request on a Saturday night. And I told her that, you know, it would be difficult because she's basically putting somebody out of the way. And she said, "Well, don't you think a Christian should drop everything to help another Christian? I know I would if I had the opportunity." And the call kind of went downhill from there. But I wished afterwards, I was thinking about it, and I wish I had asked her, "Well, what have you done recently for your fellow Christian?" But of course, I know what the answer probably would have been. "Well, I'm not well off, and the opportunity hasn't come up." See, she was looking for a free haircut on a Saturday night after everything was closed for her daughter. And the thought rankled me. And the more I thought about it, the more I wanted to know why. And the particular thing I came to a conclusion is that, well, Christians should be willing and grateful for the opportunity to serve one another. But what rings false is a sentiment of demanding actions of others to benefit oneself. See, go back to Matthew again. And this time let's go to Matthew 23 and verse 4. Jesus in this chapter is rebuking the Pharisees for burdening other people without shouldering their own burdens. In Matthew 23 verse 4 it says, "They tie up heavy burdens and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move them with so much as a finger." They are quite willing to make other people do things and have a hard time at accomplishing them, but they themselves don't necessarily ease the burdens that other people face. So these are people who tell you what you need to do, but they make no effort in helping you to accomplish that. There are people who create crises and then tell you it's your Christian duty to help them out of their crisis, but they make no effort to work with you. So again, the woman wanting a free haircut on late Saturday night. But some might disagree, but I'm sorry, but a haircut is not an emergency situation. It just doesn't come up to that level of... There was no offer to come at a convenient time. There was no offer to help lift some other burden. Now, she could have probably have asked, well, can I help clean to pay you back? Let me get a meal together since I'm taking up your time. That wasn't in consideration. There was a demand without payment. It's like being in, the indebted servant who receives mercy from his master but can't extend the same mercy to his fellow servants, as also talked about in Matthew. Another problem, as I was thinking about this, is that there's a demand for righteous acts that are benefiting the one who's doing the demanding. See, as Christians, we're not to go looking for personal benefits. That's not what being a Christian is about. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul talks about his serving in preaching the gospel. And in 1 Corinthians 10 and in verse 24, it says, let no one seek his own good, but that of his neighbor. That is what Christianity is about. Seeking the benefit to other people. Not seeking benefits to themselves. Paul never looked for his own profit. In that same chapter down in verse 33, it says, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, so that they may be saved. This then is what the purpose of being a Christian is to help other people. For example, Paul taught in the churches where churches are expected to support the preachers, yet Paul generally and regularly did not take that support. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and in verse 7, 1 Corinthians 9 verse 7, it says, who at any time serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat the fruit of it? Or who tends a flock and does not use the milk of the flock? I'm not speaking these things according to human judgment, am I? Or does not the law also say these things? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the ox while he's threshing the threshing. God is not concerned about oxen, is he? Or is he speaking altogether for our sakes? Yes, for our sakes it was written, because the plowman ought to plow in hope, and the thresher to thresh in the hope of sharing the crops. It is expected that one benefits from the work one does. That's normal. Jumping down to verse 13, Paul says, do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple? And those who attend regularly to the altar have their share from the altar? So also the Lord directed that those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel. And one of the problems that Paul had with people was that because he chose not to take a living from the ones he was immediately teaching, they thought that was odd. But yet Paul was saying, hey, I have the right to do that. I have the right to ask for that. But Paul didn't want anybody to think it was he was in it for the money. So in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 18, he said, when then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I may win the more. But you know what? I have people, and I've had these discussions in the past with other people, not here, but I have people, you know, trying to justify themselves and saying, well, wait a minute. So Paul didn't take money because he didn't want to look like he was being paid for it. Then you ought to not take money. We shouldn't have to pay our preacher. He should do it for free because Paul did it. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, he just missed completely Paul's point. But not only that, if you think about it, if it would be wrong for a church to approach a preacher and say, we think it's better for you not to receive any wages. One is a removing a right from a fellow Christian that Paul says ought to be there. And two, they're the ones benefiting from that removal. They're demanding of other people to sacrifice for their personal benefit. And that's selfishness. Unfortunately, there are some people who treat godliness as a means of personal gain. Take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting with verse 5. And constant friction between men of depraved mind and deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. There are people that look at being godly as a benefit, a way of making money for themselves, or a gain of some sort. Again, going back to the original example, the woman that was calling was basically thinking, well, since I'm claiming to be a Christian, therefore I ought to get free benefits from that. It's a way of gaining. And actually, that's a problem that Israel always had. Zechariah chapter 7 talks about it as one of their difficulties. In Zechariah chapter 7, and starting with verse 5, Zechariah 7, starting with verse 5, it says, say to all the people of the land and to the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh month, these 70 years, was it actually for me that you fasted? When you eat and drink, do you not eat for yourselves and do you not drink for yourselves? Are not these the words of the Lord proclaimed by the former prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and prosperous, along with the cities around it and the Negev and the foothills that were abandoned? What he is basically charging is saying the fast and the sacrifices were not for God. They were doing it to bring self-glory. Even into Jesus' day, Jesus charged the Pharisees with doing it for show, so that other men could see them. The feasts, Zechariah is saying, were not to praise God, but basically to feed their own bellies. Hosea also had something to say about this in Hosea chapter 10. Hosea chapter 10, and starting with verse 1, says, Israel is a luxuriant vine. He produces fruit for himself. The more his fruit, the more altars he made, the richer his land, the better he made the sacred pillars. Their heart is faithless. Now they must bear their guilt. The Lord will break down their altars and destroy their sacred pillars. What God is telling us through Hosea is that the Israelites prospered in the land, but they spent the profits making their places of worship look better. In this case, it was idolatry that they were dressing up. But still, the problem is they took what God benefited them. And does God ask for fanciness in his worship? And the answer is he told them what to do and what he needed, but it was for their benefit. We see this in the denominational world as well. It doesn't do just to have a building in which to assemble it. It has to be a great, big, grand edifice. For whom is that being built? Does God need fancy buildings? Or are they doing it for their own glory? Then another problem also that I thought of is really there's a disregard for other people. See, some people take without regard for other people. In Ezekiel chapter 34, again, this is a problem that we find in Israel. Ezekiel chapter 34, we're going to start with verse 18 and read down to 22. Is it too slight a thing for you that you should feed in the good pasture, that you must tread down your feet with the rest of the pasture? Or that you should drink of the clear waters, that you must foul the rest with your feet? As for my flock, they must eat what you tread down with your feet and drink what you foul with your feet. Therefore, thus says the Lord God to them, Behold, I, even I, will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. Because you push with side and with shoulder and thrust with at all the weak with your horns until you have scattered them abroad. Therefore I will deliver my flock, and they will no longer be a prey. And I will judge between one sheep and another. What God is charging when he talks about the fat sheep, they're the ones demanding their rights. They're the ones that constantly push ahead. You ever seen a bunch of animals eating together? You always find at least one or two that seem to dominate everybody else. They push everybody else out of the way. And they got plenty. They're much fatter than everybody else. And what God is saying, that's just the way the Israelites were behaving. Some of them were pushing everybody else aside in their eagerness to gain and disregarding those who needed help. You know, all resources are limited. A person only has so much time and so much funds to do good. And so when anybody demands something for themselves, they're taking it away from somebody else. There are times when people need help. And we ought to be willing and able and gracious in giving that help to other people. There's a whole different thing when a person says, I have to have it. And you have to give it to me. One of the things that Isaiah charges in Isaiah 56. Isaiah 56, and starting with verse 9. All you beasts of the field, all you beasts of the forest, come to eat. His watchmen are blind, all of them know nothing. All of them are mute dogs, unable to bark, dreamers lying down who love to slumber. The dogs are greedy, they are not satisfied. They are shepherds who have no understanding. They have all turned to their own way, each one to his unjust gain, to the last one. Come, they say, let us get wine, and let us drink heavily of strong drink, and tomorrow will be like today, only more so. The charge is basically that the lazy and the greedy are never satisfied. They always demand more. And they don't put anything into it. They just demand more. And very much like the man Haman. Back in the book of Esther, Haman was one of the tops in the government at that time. He'd risen to high stature. And the king wanted to praise somebody. And it's very interesting how it comes across in Esther chapter 6 and in verse 6. So Haman came in, and the king said to him, What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor? And Haman said to himself, Whom would the king desire to honor more than me? He couldn't imagine anybody else needing honor more than he did, even though he was a top dog in that kingdom. All he was concerned about was himself. See, Christianity is about putting other people first and ourselves last. In Philippians chapter 2, Philippians chapter 2, and starting with verse 3, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Everyone should be more important than I am. That's the attitude Christ gave. As God, he came to earth. That's the point that Paul continues to make in Philippians. Took on the form of man so that he might serve mankind. And he certainly didn't do it because we demanded it of him. He offered it. Being a Christian is a self-sacrifice. In Romans chapter 12, Romans chapter 12, and it's starting with verse 1, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. We are to present our lives as sacrifices to God. That means, in a lot of ways, that we take ourselves second. But what we have is, oftentimes in the world, people who want to put themselves first, demanding of Christians that they have to put themselves second. And the whole idea is backwards. The whole idea is completely reversed from what is being taught. The world doesn't behave in this way. The world always thinks about themselves first. But that's quite all right, because as Christians, we're not of this world. We don't behave in that way. We willingly offer ourselves to help other people. But at the same time, we need to teach some people that they have to do their part. They need to be thinking about what they can do for other people. And if everyone was doing that, then the world would be a better place. I hope you'll think about these things. Quite a bit shorter than I was expecting as a lesson. But I hope you'll think about how we ought to act and treat our lives in service to one another. Not to be selfish, not to be overbearing, not to put burdens on other people, but thinking about how we might lighten the burdens for everyone else in this world while we're here. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than put on Christ. If there's anyone here is a child of God, like the prayers of brethren on the behalf. Why don't you come forward if you stand and sing the song selected?